Cisco Cloud.
Well, we've lived the reality for the past 6-7 years, so I don't know how you can describe it as
a myth.
As a myth.
Just me. I'm fortunately not standing alone. But mind you, Shane, it's a particular school of thought. Let me tell you what it is. It's post-Keynesian, all right?
All right.
It's a straight school of thought, as opposed to New Keynesian or monetarist.
All right, call it.
Let me get Shane's take on this part, Colin.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we're mixing up the names here, too.
Yeah.
This is Shane here now.
So
I think, just listening to the conversation, so I think there are a couple of things. One of the important things that happened, which I think hasn't been put into the conversation, that's probably the thing that solves the problem that you're having in the discussion, is that a lot of the revenue that was lost was externally earned from international business. So that a lot of that revenue, even if you saw the fiscal deficit getting smaller, because that revenue had been increasing, let's say, in previous years before 2008, it wasn't a drain. Yes, but it wasn't a drain on the citizens of the country. As a matter of fact, it benefited the country because they were you were taking revenue from outside, from foreigners, more or less, or non-residents, and you were being able to spend it domestically. What has happened is because you've lost that, you've now translated that into taxing the same people that were benefiting from it. They're the ones that now have to pay the same tax to finance.
But there's no need to do that. That goes back to the point I was making. There's absolutely no need to increase taxation to pay for anything. A sovereign currency issue does not have to look for the money it uses. What I'm trying to suggest is taxation is exceedingly important, right? To reduce that spending. That's from the beginning of a government's fiscal year, first day of the fiscal year, the deficit spending. Because, this is a new fiscal year. Spending old tax money from the previous year does not help that. There are deficit spending from day one.
Mm-hmm. So I think the other thing is confidence. Now, if you have a deficit, it means that it ultimately has to be financed by someone, right?
Yeah,
and you need
bank.
To have, well...
Yeah, I know nobody likes it.
All right. But traditionally, governments will finance.
Let me hit you with one question before you go on. Mm-hmm. And on that same point, all right? If the government sat down and decided, look, this is a hypothetical, okay? Look, we're going to do our refinancing this way. We only sent the NIS X dollars, and we owe the central bank Y dollars. Mm-hmm. The central bank have claimed sometime back under the previous governor that they need recapitalizing. Right? If the government sat back and said, look, okay, the only way you're going to get recapitalized is by a bond issuance. And the former Minister of Finance also said that he will create interest-free bonds to recapitalize the central bank. As far as Bank for International Settlements is concerned, it don't need refinancing, but still be on the hypothetical. Mm-hmm. So we look at what is owed to the central bank. We look at what is owed to the NIS, right? And we do an adder turner, and we add all of that up, and you say the central bank will now, right, create additional amount of credit for the Treasury, add it to what we owe the rest, we will pay off all of that. Bang, all of a sudden you have reduced debt by some $2 billion. Central bank is recapitalized, and NIS got back the cash. Now, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to the economy? None. Not one thing.
I agree. That is very hypothetical.
It has little basis
in reality. I do not intend to be insulting or anything like that.
No, go right ahead.
That's Carlos.
The truth is, though, I do understand your train of thought, and it would be apt in the United States of America or large industrial countries that have tradable exchange rate regimes. But we simply do not have that latitude. And that's why the U.S. would have been able to practice quantitative easing and pursue monetary expansion to the extent where you had negative interest yield curves at some point and so on. The result there would have been... Their currency would have lost value and so on. They have the reserve currency. The U.S. does have flexibility that we can't even begin to imagine. We have a fixed exchange rate regime. And when it all comes back down, government, as we expect individuals and households and private sector individuals to live within their means, government has to do likewise.
Government budget is not like a household budget. If government does not create the currency in which the country operates, we have no operate unless we can become a currency board or we can adopt the
government
US dollar.
The government does have more flexibility, yes, than a private sector entity or a household. I give you that.
Simply because it is the creator of the currency and not just simply the user of it.
Yes, but that too has its limits. And I'm afraid we've reached our limit. We've reached our limit. So that really is the point.
All right, just hold a minute. Shin?
Yeah, let me just say this. Any agent in the economy, right, that is causing, if you have a fixed exchange rate and you're trying to maintain reserves, if we've accepted that that's what we are and that's what we want to do.
That's an important point,
right.
Yes.
Any agent then that its actions then generate a net outflow of foreign exchange, a persistent net outflow to the extent that it threatens the level of those reserves and the stability of the dollar, I think that then becomes a problem. So if you have a government that is spending too much and that spending is generating as we've had in the last, say, 4 or 5 years, you have a government whose credit rating is as such that it is having to pay higher coupons on existing debt because there's some of our debt that for every downgrade, the interest rate goes up. And then you're having to pay back that debt without being able to replace it. That becomes a problem. I think we've had a lot of discussion about, you know, hypothetical situations and what's not, but I think maybe we can agree that any agent that leads to that unsustainable decline in reserves is creating a problem and has to be fixed.
Absolutely agree.
All right. I want to ask, if I may, I just want to ask a question, if I may. Can the central bank earn foreign exchange? Can it?
So what the central bank does is that it is the government's banker. So let's say, for example, the government had borrowed money and place it at the central bank, or let's say the commercial bank sell money to the central bank. That money goes into the reserves, and then those reserves are invested in securities, whether it be U.S. treasuries or some very safe security, and that security itself earns interest, and that interest is in foreign exchange, and that's actually how the central bank has traditionally made money to pay wages and salaries. So it can, but that is not its, I suppose, primary purpose,
Okay. All right. We are on the home stretch. As you know, we're heading quickly to quarter after. So what I want to do is bring in a couple of callers who've been waiting there very patiently. I want to thank you callers for waiting so patiently, and then take some WhatsApps and finish off with some very pointed questions.
Let me just also say that we've won the match against Sri Lanka.
Yes. It was 258 more to win, not 258. I think they were out for 226. So they were at 222 when we said 227. There was a little error, but we've won. That's the important part. Well,
so
good afternoon.
I'm out of here then. I'm out of here.
Well, if you want to, the producer has agreed to let you hold, so you can hold if you want. But we're bringing some additional callers. So just hold on. Brastats, good afternoon. You're on the air. Hello, Brastats, you're on the air. All right, callers, you got to get close to the telephone. Now you've been holding on for quite a while. Brastats, good afternoon. You're on the air. Okay, let's go again. Brastats, Sunday, you're on the air. Go ahead. Hello, good afternoon. Okay. Good afternoon, Brastats. Sunday, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yeah, all right. I want to call to fortify you and a statement you would have made earlier about CBZ. If you recall, Mr. Corey, about a month ago, I made the point that CBZ should be making money sufficient to lend out money. You remember that statement?
Mm-hmm, I do. Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't want any person called talking a lot of foolishness. CBC is an entity where you hear a radio station and a TV station not making money.
Right, I ain't seeing it as foolishness. Everybody will have their own opinion.
That word foolishness, but I'm saying, right? Mm-hmm. Not crossing you. But I'm saying that it's an entity with good, solid management in place. It will bring dividends. There's no discussion about that.
Okay. All right, no problem. Brastats, Sunday, good afternoon. You're on the air. Okay. Got one chance to go. Brastats, Sunday, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hello, Corey.
Yes, please.
Right. I just want to add something quickly. I think the key, we have determined the direction in which we are going. And the key to it now is going to be the negotiation that we are going to be able to have with the various creditors in terms of telling them, okay, the length of time for which we intend to suspend the payment of debt and the confidence to say, well, listen, if you maintain this arrangement with us, you will benefit in the long run. So therefore, the key now is also in terms of the negotiating of that we do in going forward. And I would also like the economist to speak with respect to what impact the reprofiling of the external debt is also going to have to the raising of the Credit Suisse loan in terms of, because it's tied to that credit rating. What impact is that going to have going forward?
All right, gentlemen. I want you to keep your answers short because lots of questions I would have kind of collated here while it was on the air from particularly the chat and the WhatsApp. So what impact would it have? Let's start with you, Shane.
Well, normally any credit rating downgrade is going to lead to an increase in the interest rate to pay on the Credit Suisse loan. The fact that the government has announced it suspended all payments means that that really doesn't matter too much in the short term because whatever it goes up to is not being paid. And I think ultimately what will happen to it will, again, be the subject of the conclusion of whatever negotiations they have, the government has with Credit Suisse and all of its other creditors. So just, it's very difficult to say what will happen to it because we don't know what the negotiations are going to be like.
All right.
Yeah, the simple answer to the caller's question, I do agree with the first point he made. What happens here depends on the negotiations going forward. And of course, the objective is to reduce our interest liabilities that we currently have. As it relates to the Credit Suisse loan, well, the simple answer there is that too would be subject to the negotiations. And the objective there would be to reduce the interest, at the very least, the interest obligations associated with that loan. And that was a particularly bad loan in the sense that it was wedded to future downgrades. So for every additional downgrade, the interest rates went up. And I'm sure the government's intention would be to remedy that particular situation. The other point I would like to make is that credit rating downgrades following the government's announcement really mean nothing. It's a moot point. The government has signaled its intention to pursue debt reprofiling of all of its debt, and that essentially results in a selective default. So, in effect, certainly on the foreign side, we are in default. And basically, once negotiations have been concluded and we get the details of that, I expect with the IMF assistance as well that would be a successful undertaking. And then we can see the result being government receiving some fiscal space by virtue of having reduced interest rate obligations at the very least, and that we can look forward to credit rating upgrades in the future.
Okay. I want to put some comments that came in during the program to you guys. This one says, Corey, it makes no sense restructuring the debt without going to the root causes of the debt, which are energy and food imports. Any IMF program should include an aggressive renewable energy adaptation and high-tech agricultural program to deal with two of the largest sources of foreign debt. BRIA has advocated for a 5-year rapid retransition strategy. Please share this with Shane Lowe. So let me start with you, Shane Lowe. What's the sense of restructuring without fixing the hole in the bucket, which is energy, food imports?
Yeah, no, I think earlier in the conversation you were asking me about if we just borrow to finance consumption, and I said that that's a whole nother conversation where we would want to get to a point where we don't have to rely on borrowing for that. So I would agree there. Now, I think it's important to note, though, that our foreign debt is a relatively small percentage of our total debt. It's only about $2.7 billion, and that might sound like a lot, but of a total
like me.
Of a total debt of over 13, or let's say around $14, $15 billion, then it is quite small. And then if you, out of that $2.7 billion, $900 million, so a third, is debt to what we call multilateral agencies, so the Caribbean Development Bank, the Inter-American Development Bank, and those are usually debts for specific projects. So if you want to bring in money to for some renewable energy project or fixing roads, you know, some specific thing, and it comes in U.S. dollars because those agencies are not domestic agencies. So that leaves $1.8 billion in commercial lending, which again, if you compare that to the other, like I said, over $11 billion in domestic debt is a relatively small amount.
I want to thank you for that. That's something I wanted to trash out in the beginning. Let's get some WhatsApps in and then we get your response and reply. This one says, morning. The 100 people from CDC can be split into four teams of 25. One team to look at the sports and culture and highlight and create content. Bashment, soca, comedy, etc. Other genres to ensure these are covered year-round. Team 2, agriculture promotion for local farmers and farmers markets. Team 3, promotion of the new blue economy effort. And team 4 contracted to roam between other ministries for content services needed. This one asks Corey, what about employee appraisals annually? That's something that's needed. This one says, Corey, first and foremost, the system of promotion based on seniority only has to be changed. And I think that has been adjusted when we look at the qualification legislation that was placed recently. This one says, Corey, when you get bus fare prices, when you get to bus fare prices, I would like to see an overhaul of flexible bus fares for elderly or discounted prices for children going to school between 6 a.m. and 5 p.m., $1, $1.50, and $2 after 5 p.m. for the general public. And the general public will be $2.50 and $3.50 by distances. Introduce apps for the general public to see if buses are on time, who use bus regularly, we can use bus cards, etc. The technology is there. And this one says, hi, Corey. I hate to hear people say that the solution to fixing the economy is always to send home civil servants. It seems that the answer to everything is to take a stick and beat civil servants with it. The government needs money. The government needs money. It takes out a stick and beats civil servants by increasing taxation and mass layoffs. The next thing is this idea that the private sector is going to absorb the newly unemployed. But have you ever noticed that the private sector depends on the civil servants to patronize their businesses? Let me repeat that the private sector depends on civil servants to patronize their businesses. Have you ever seen price mark after civil servants get their salaries? Politicians make the decisions with our economy that has gotten it to where it is. Similarly, politicians hire the people to the civil service, especially the SOEs. There has to be a better way of solving our problems than firing civil servants. I personally don't mind attrition and a hiring freeze, but to say to hardworking Barbadians that due to no fault of your own, you're going to be laid off because 30 people in Parliament didn't know what they were doing, that is wrong. Stop taking out a big stick to beat civil servants every time politicians lead us astray. Sorry for the length of the message, but it is something that bothers me deeply. Now, that one was quite long and I wanted to read that out especially. This one says, good morning to everyone. On the current discussion, CBC should be sold. No government should own a broadcasting firm. I also believe Water Authority should be sold, particularly as well as the Transport Board. The NHC should be closed as well and housing be led by the private sector. I would like to discuss these companies increasing their costs to do service. Now, this is the same person. It's kind of contradictory, but just follow me. It says, I would like to discuss these companies increasing their costs on their services. Do they have a social conscience? These companies are seeking to increase their profit margins rather than allow the policy to do as intended and increase the disposable income of the masses. It is disgusting, and as a young person, I wish I had options to let them understand how I feel. If a company would pledge to keep their prices constant, we should all switch. If they shouldn't keep the price.
Can I make a comment, please, sir?
Go ahead, sir.
There is no business that operates with a social conscience. There is no such animal in business. Mm-hmm. And anybody who believes that really needs to take their head out of the ground. One.
Absolutely true.
Do you have a choice? Yes. Throw the phone away. Why do we become slaves to a piece of communication equipment?
True.
And if you make people believe that you need them more than they need you, they'll ride your backs. That's a fact of life. Now, number three, and this is what, as you head to the end, I'd just like to put on the table. We talk a lot about trimming or expenses. cutting or costs, charging for user fees and trimming here and trimming there, and that's important. Rationalizing is important. How do we earn our way out of this mess? What are we going to create that we're going to sell to earn foreign exchange? Carlos says we can't continue talking about land at its highest economic value. We've sold all we can. The governor of the central bank has said you can only sell an asset once. Agree with him. How do we earn our way out of this? When we've given concessions to the people who earn foreign exchange, that does not guarantee that they bring foreign exchange into the country as a reason for them having the concessions. In other words, you say to them, I'm giving you 25 years or 20 years, but every year I expect 8%, 5%, 10% of your earnings to remain here. Or you have to have something that you say you bring back
you
as a result
of
what you're giving.
Shane and Dennis, and that's like, are we supposed to depend on loans? And that's where it was really getting at. How do we earn? And a lot of things have been placed on the table in terms of niche market, special things with the agricultural products and these all these different things. But let's put the question to the guests. How do we earn?
Well, let me give an example of a... Let me give an example of... So I spoke about Barbados having a current account deficit, which means that ultimately you borrow to finance that gap. But let's give an example of a country that has a current account surplus.
Norway.
Talking even smaller than that, right?
Iceland.
Bermuda.
There you go.
Now, Bermuda is not as... I don't think they're as big as Barbados. Mm-hmm. But what do they earn money from? A lot of international business, right? Now, look at a country like Cayman. You don't hear about Cayman having foreign exchange problems.
Massive surpluses.
Right? Exactly. on the fiscal side as well, debt of, 15-16% of GDP. And there are some other smaller countries within our Caribbean region that have those. Now, how they're able to achieve that isn't just exports of actual food and
commodities.
Goods, but services. So the international business sector plays a big role there. And a lot of our issues stemmed from in 2009 when the Canadians changed their tax laws and stuff. So that is a sector that we don't really talk a lot about. And I suspect we don't really understand it very well. And there's not a lot of data that comes out to us to really understand it that well, to be honest. But I think that is a sector to look into. Because if little Bermuda can do it, we are bigger in size and all that. Certainly, Barbados can achieve that as well. And if you look at the, there's a colleague that I have in Canada that always used to state that Bermuda is a net creditor to the world. In other words, the country of Bermuda has lent more money out to others than it has borrowed. And that is because it's been able to build up what you call an international investment position. In other words, it has more net assets. In other words, it's built up more foreign exchange overseas than it has actually borrowed, which is somewhat the opposite of what Barbados has.
Non-independent countries, or Shane.
That's the other thing. Non-independent, which means that they have certain restrictions. They can't just spend as they feel like.
Yeah, I mean, we can do it, though, even though we are independent. It just requires discipline and political will. And I would say vision and the determination to make decisions that are in the best interest of the country and not just pursuing political expediency. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the point Dennis made, Mr. Johnson made, are very well made, as well as many of the WhatsApp contributors. It really does, in fact, boil down to earning. We have to... I don't like to conflate government with the economy. That happens, I think, too often. Mm-hmm. Growth has to be led by the private sector, yes. But we have a country where traditionally government has set the tone, both in terms of its policy and so on, for growth. And sometimes lead growth, the tourism marketing, for example, the arrangements around international business and so on. So we're accustomed to government leading growth. I think what is important is for government to ensure that it undertakes the necessary reforms so that we can improve the environment for doing business in Barbados.
There's a question here, and it says, can Barbados renegotiate with Canada then? And that's one of the things I was wondering when I heard about this $300 million going out to the economy through these Canadian contracts and changing legislation. So in terms of a solution, I think that that's something we need to look at. So much more to say, so much more to discuss, so little time left, and we're talking about seconds. So I want to take this opportunity to thank our guests, Shane Lowe, the president of the Barbados Economic Society. We had Nikita Latouche earlier on at the beginning. We have Carlos Chase, an economist, on the air as well. And we have the anonymous business administrator slash economist expert. He doesn't like to be called on the air as well. So I want to thank you all. I want to thank Dennis for taking care of things technical and being a wonderful producer today. All those who've called, who've messaged, who've made the program what it has been. And of course, we got to thank that sponsorship that we talked about that lacking in other places. We got to thank Williams Industries Incorporated for making this and all the other Brass That Sundays possible. And a special thanks again to you, Shane, for coming out at last minute and doing your national duty in educating the public of Barbados. Keep it locked to Voice of Barbados. I'm your host and moderator, Corey Lane Singh. Lane, out.